Hi everyone, Matt Polka with ACA Connects, America's Communications Association, and welcome to another edition of our ACA Connects podcast. Let's get ready to connect and communicate. Before we introduce our guest today, let me tell you a little bit about Representative Rob Whitman of the U.S. House of Representatives. Congressman Whitman was first elected to serve the 1st Congressional District of Virginia, America's first district, in 2007. For more than 20 years, he served in several levels of government, from the Montrose Town Council, where he also served as mayor, to the Westmoreland County Board of Supervisors, where he served as chairman, to the 99th Legislative District in the Virginia House of Delegates, where he served until he was elected to the United States House of Representatives in 2007. In the U.S. Congress, Congressman Whitman serves on the House Armed Services Committee and the Committee on Natural Resources. Prior to his election, Congressman Whitman spent 26 years working in state government, most recently as a field director for the Virginia Health Department's Division of Shellfish Sanitation, and he also spent many years as an environmental health specialist for local health departments in Virginia's Northern Neck and Middle Peninsula regions. He holds a PhD in public policy and administration from Virginia Commonwealth University, a Master of Public Health degree in health policy and administration from the University of North Carolina, and a Bachelor of Science degree in biology from Virginia Tech. Here's my ACA Connects podcast interview with Congressman Rob Whitman. We are here today with a very special guest to our ACA Connects podcast, and that is Congressman Rob Whitman of the 1st District of Virginia. Congressman, welcome to our ACA Connects podcast.
Matt, it's great to be with you today.
Let's start at home. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your district?
Well, the 1st District is a geographically diverse district, a large district at that. It starts in the northern area with Prince William County, so we go from Woodbridge to Quantico, all the way over to Noakesville, and then we head down through Stafford and Spotsylvania County, including Caroline, and then over to Hanover, including Ashland and Mechanicsville, and then down to Jamestown, over just about to Williamsburg, and then back up through the northern neck and middle peninsula. So the Chesapeake Bay is the central part of the district and an important element to our economy there, and it's also the lifeblood to many of our waterside communities there in the district. And it's home to the highest current and active duty military populations of any congressional district in the country, and we have military bases there from Marine Corps Base Quantico to Dahlgren Naval Support Facility to Fort AP Hill. So lots of great military presence there, lots of great natural resources.
We're going to talk on our podcast about your particular interest in broadband issues, not only in the Congress, but also for our country. But tell us first about some of the unique broadband needs of your district.
Sure. Well, the northern part of the district has some population centers, so some of those areas have broadband coverage, as others don't. You know, you would think the more populated areas would have complete broadband coverage, but they don't. Even the upper parts of Prince William County that have higher populations, we see that there is some spottiness in broadband coverage. So we've been working through a variety of opportunities to extend coverage there. In the same way in places like Stafford County, even when you get to a county like Hanover County that has over 100,000 people in population, there's lots of rural areas there. So Hanover has its own set of challenges there. In fact, I was meeting the other day with some members of the Board of Supervisors. In fact, one of the town halls we had in the district, the question that was consistent from town hall to town hall were about broadband and broadband coverage. So we understand that it's important in people's minds, and we want to make sure that we are getting folks connected. We know that, you know, from the telecom industry to the wireless industries, to the satellite industries, everybody there is looking at, you know, how can they provide service. Each of the geographic regions, you know, have their own challenges. When you get into the rural areas there, you have some providers, but not others. And we have been all about making sure that we extend service there, and then make sure that we have, you know, quality service. Make sure that we have speed, So we need bandwidth in order to do that, make sure we have adequate upload and download speeds. And I think that those things are key for people because many of the access opportunities that they have don't provide the quality of service that they need with both upload and download speeds.
Now you're on the Armed Services Committee and also Natural Resources, but very, very early on in your time in Congress, you've developed an interest in these broadband issues and have really become a broadband champion, not only for your district, but also in other ways as you seek to author and encourage more discussion and action on broadband deployment and these issues in Congress and elsewhere. Tell us about how this particular interest of yours developed that has led you to become such a broadband champion.
Sure. Well, it started back in my days on the Board of Supervisors in Westmoreland County. We were challenged to create connectivity in the county, and we were looking at a variety of different opportunities there, from cable companies to wireless providers to even satellite providers, and looking for the best way that we as a county could do things. And I worked with folks in the Regional Planning District Commission, and we were able to get some opportunities here. We were able to get some providers to come into the area, so we did get some coverage there. And of course, I'm still a resident today in the little town of Montrose in Westmoreland County, so I still hear and experience firsthand the plight that rural residents have when it comes to high-speed broadband. And when I moved from there on to the General Assembly, worked quite a bit there in General Assembly on broadband issues, including getting some legislation passed that allowed localities to join together and form essentially broadband authorities so we could leverage a regional concept and how we got resources and efforts to these areas. When I was here in Congress, I also saw the need of that, and I founded the First District Broadband Task Force, where we were talking about solutions, bringing decision makers in, looking at how we could actually get things done. And back in October 2017, I hosted the Federal Communications Commission Chairman Ajit Pai in Warsaw, and we brought in industry stakeholders as well as state and local leaders to talk about, you know, what could we do to, you know, cut red tape, make sure that we were providing opportunities for people to access spectrum all in all the different areas. What could we do to strengthen public-private partnerships? How do we increase cooperation among state and local government entities as well as the private sector to get projects done more quickly? And then in May of 2018, I had Don Kinkoff and Jim Wasilewski, the senior officials at the National Telecommunications and Information Administration, and they came down to talk about broadband access, and we discussed with them some of the challenges and hurdles that we had in the first district and what some of the solutions were to overcome them, things like needing to improve how we map broadband and how we should expand public-private partnerships, how we leverage federal dollars to a greater extent with state and local dollars. So with that, you know, it led me to champion several pieces of legislation going forward to make things more attractive for providers in rural areas, to make things easier for them, to make sure we have accurate information so that we were not duplicating resources as far as federal dollars coming to localities where we weren't creating a competition to an existing provider that would not help in getting to those folks that are unserved. So I think we had a lot of great outcomes from that. We're in the process of planning more of these roundtables in the district in the coming year.
Well, it's hard to imagine these days how anybody could live without significant, adequate broadband coverage, and that's certainly, I think, a reason why pretty early on, too, you became a member of the House Rural Broadband Caucus, and this year you were named co-chair of the caucus. Tell us a little bit about the work that you do within the caucus, what you hope to achieve, and maybe some of the issues that you expect to consider this year working with your other members of Congress.
Sure. Well, it's an honor for me to be selected as one of the co-chairs of the Broadband Caucus. And really the caucus is about bringing folks together, members of Congress and their staffs, to talk about, first of all, what are the issues we deal with in rural America when it comes to broadband access, and what are we going to do to make things happen more quickly? How do we get the regulatory agencies that are either promulgating regulations, applying dollars from the federal level, looking at what industry is doing, looking at what we can do to help industry, looking at what we can do to make the regulatory realm easier so that we can expand broadband service in these areas throughout the country that do not have broadband. I want to make sure we're looking at that and determining what can we do in a larger infrastructure proposal or infrastructure bill to make sure that broadband is part of that. And I recently sent a letter to Speaker Pelosi urging broadband investments in the funding bills that are put forward by the majority and urging them to develop policies that could be included in infrastructure legislation that would actually make it easier for these broadband systems to be built out. And we want to make sure we're looking very carefully at the new USDA Reconnect program that took the dollars that were appropriated in the last omnibus budget bill, which was over $600 million in grant and loan funds to provide broadband service to unserved areas. And I want to make sure that we are getting those dollars to the areas in need in Virginia. And I led a campaign within Virginia to make sure all localities within my district provided comments to the program. And actually, Virginia provided the largest number of comments to the program. So we were successful in getting folks involved. And I believe in my leadership position there in the caucus, I'll be able to bring Virginia's perspective there and then look at what we can do to make it easier to expand broadband throughout Virginia in working with the state, local governments, internet service providers, and partnering with the federal government and looking at what we can do to expand that connectivity throughout the First District and in turn throughout Virginia.
I appreciate what you had to say about USDA's Reconnect program because it's a big issue for our ACA Connects members, particularly because of an issue that you fought for a lot, and that is ensuring that existing federal funds through federal broadband programs truly do cover the needs of rural America where that funding is needed, where those programs can provide funds to unserved areas to ensure that we're getting broadband where it's needed and not to basically fund other kinds of overbuilds of existing providers. How can we continue to ensure that there is significant and sufficient oversight in these programs to ensure that taxpayer funds are being used properly and are targeted to get broadband where it's needed the most?
Well, I think, first of all, making sure we have accurate information to determine what areas are actually unserved, I think that's the key. And we talked about the Reconnect program at USDA and talking about how they should be leveraging those dollars with private dollars and state dollars. But on top of that, congressional oversight that we are putting in place to watch those programs, understand where the dollars are going and how they are being applied. There's also the Federal Communications Commission's CAF Phase 2 high cost program, which is going to go a long way to get dollars to areas to make sure we make the business models or the business cases easier for those because, as you know, much of it is density and take rates, which is, you know, how many people live in an area, how many people will take the service. And much of what happens in rural areas is if you don't have enough density or you don't have enough people that will actually purchase the service, it's hard to make a business case to go into those areas. So we want to make sure we're making things easier in those areas where the business case is either marginal or sometimes even underwater and help there. Also, the eConnect pilot program at Rural Utility Service is essential, too, to make sure that we are looking at, you know, how do we get to these less populated areas and make sure that they are on a level playing field with other areas that are more populated. And what we've done, Matt, is to make sure we're taking a tech-neutral approach. In other words, I'm technology agnostic. I want to make sure we're looking at all forms of technology in these last-mile strategies. You know, you can look at the pipeline that is the head-in facilities. How do you get to the places to then distribute the connectivity? So, you know, your middle-mile strategies, how do you get them maybe to a connector? But then how do you do last mile? You know, how do you get to those last few homes in an area? I think those things are all important. And the things we talked about or opportunities for us to do that. And, you know, I think Chairman Pai and the FCC have done a commendable job in ensuring that the CAF Phase 2 program provides the most efficient competitive process that assures that there are equitable opportunities for all sizes of providers. And it also, again, prioritizes dollars going to unserved areas. We want to make sure that, that everybody has an opportunity. It shouldn't just be that, you know, the places where the population exists, you know, get all of the money. We want to make sure that some of these less populated areas get the money, because a lot of times those can be used as leapfrog opportunities to be able to serve other areas, you know, and that's how you create this fabric of connectivity, is to get into a few areas, and that gives you the infrastructure to be able to leapfrog and serve other areas. So I think those things are extraordinarily important. And that assures that we're putting money in the right places, and we're not, as you said, doing overbuilds and building over other service providers, and again, making it sometimes difficult for them to succeed in those less populated areas.
I want to get to your own ideas regarding broadband legislation next, but before I do that, I wanted to ask you a bit of a broader question about what you think are perhaps some of the more major broadband issues that Congress in the new 116th Congress should consider and even move forward on legislation.
Well, first of all, we have to have accurate maps. We have to make sure we understand what areas are not served, and they have to be accurate. And I've heard from constituents and the Federal Communications Commission, the National Telecommunications and Information Administration, and industry folks to say that we need better mapping, and we've dedicated some resources there, but we have to do more. I want to make sure, too, that we're promoting and expanding public-private partnerships, leveraging dollars to the maximum extent possible from all different sources in all different areas of our districts and across the Commonwealth and across the nation. And we have to look at modernizing our laws and regulations for new-age broadband technologies. And just the other day, I was working with Dominion Energy to look at joint use agreements for power poles. They were putting power underground in an area, and instead of taking down the power poles, it's an opportunity for the internet service provider in the area to actually lease those poles under a joint lease agreement and be able to use those poles either to put up fiber or to put up antennas. So we have to look at, you know, how our laws and regulations are shaped, and making sure, too, we don't miss opportunities for all types of technologies to be able to be utilized. We want to, as I said earlier, we want to make sure it's a technology-agnostic approach. We're not choosing one technology over the other. We want the technology that makes the most sense from a business case. You know, we want to make sure that we are encouraging any type of technology to make sure we can create this connectivity. And again, want to make sure, too, that as the discussion takes place on legislation, that we are communicating with leadership as to what we think needs to be in legislation to reflect the items that I just spoke about.
So you're currently working on your own bill that would address broadband grant funding through the NTIA, the National Telecommunications Information Administration. Tell us about your bill and your plans to move it forward in this Congress.
Well, the basic elements of the bill are this. It provides a pilot broadband grant program through the National Telecommunications Information Administration, and that provides $50 million a year for 5 years. It requires a private provider to partner with a locality to participate. So, again, we want to encourage that public-private partnership I spoke about. It also includes a challenge process where members of the public, or really any provider, can address claims about the eligibility of a project area, proposed broadband project area. So we want to make sure people have opportunities to prove that that one of these proposed projects would not duplicate an already existing service within a proposed project area. So we want to make sure that as these proposals are out there, that we don't have this crossover where we have duplication of services and therefore not using our dollars in the most efficient way possible. And the other is, again, making sure we have a technology-agnostic approach, not making sure we're not choosing one technology over the other, and then prioritizing unserved areas. You know, in the past, Matt, the effort has been underserved areas. And the problem with underserved, it was a very broad definition, and you had duplication of resources. And the last thing we want is federal dollars to be used to come in and compete against existing ISPs and all of a sudden make their business plans untenable because they lose customers in an area that doesn't have enough customers to support two providers. You know, it barely has enough to support one.
So let me get to perhaps the issue of the day when we talk about broadband in Congress, and that's, depending on how you define it, net neutrality or open internet, which has become such an important issue for consumers, for internet service providers, and even for those so-called edge providers, the big tech companies like Facebook, Apple, Amazon, Netflix, Google, and Twitter. Unfortunately, it seems like the issue over the last 4 years has become seriously politicized, despite, you know, good faith efforts by some members to try to seek a compromise bipartisan bill. More recently, we have a bill that's just been introduced in the House called the Save the Net Act, which would apply 1934-era telephone common carrier Title II regulations to 21st-century internet service providers. What's your view on the bill, and do you think it's possible that we could see any kind of bipartisan legislation passed to solve this issue once and for all?
Well, I want to see us do things in a bipartisan way. I really think doing the right thing is indeed a bipartisan effort. It sometimes is difficult for that to happen up here, but I think Republicans and Democrats both support the notion of net neutrality. The problem is the Save the Net Act, otherwise known as the Title II Net Neutrality Act, is flawed in what it's trying to address in relation to the real concerns of consumers. You know, the whole thrust behind Title II is to prevent the three pillars of net neutrality. It prevents blocking, prevents throttling, and prevents paid prioritization. And listen, I support every single one of those concepts. However, I don't think that regulating the internet as a Title II common carrier utility under the Save the Internet Act is the way to go about it. I think under the guidelines of Title I, the internet as an information service has become one of the most innovative and far-reaching technologies in modern human history. It has provided more change and more opportunities, I think, than any other single technology out there. And I think Title I regulations are precisely why the internet's been able to thrive, and we must, we got to be thoughtful and reasonable about net neutrality. The Congress, this congressional game back and forth from Republican and Democrat, pinging back and forth about whether Title II or Title I is the only element harming the American consumers is not the way to go about doing it. This Save the Internet Act only seeks to regulate one side of the internet ecosystems, that is the ISPs. And we know today, the headlines tell us every day, Matt, that it's really the edge providers that are at issue here. And those edge providers are groups like Facebook and Google and Twitter. And what they do in the realm of taking your information, the issues about security of the information, you heard just the other day that millions of usernames and passwords were openly transacted within Facebook without any encoding. So you had those that information there that anybody could get hold of and then access people's Facebook accounts. So those are places where I think folks understand visually that we need to address, and this Save the Internet Act doesn't do any of that. It only talks about the providers, and I argue that in a free market, the providers are going to have consumers speak through their purchase. So if an ISP is not providing them the speed that they want, is somehow throttling content, or is doing anything there, the consumer can easily walk away from that and say, listen, I'm just going to go to another provider. Yet the edge providers, when you go and you do a search today, what's the first system that comes up? It's Google. So, you know, you have very, very few choices there about the robustness about how you search the internet. And I would argue that, you know, including Facebook and Twitter have the majority of communications opportunities for folks, and they are completely left out of this. So, listen, I support net neutrality, and I want to make sure that it applies to all areas of the internet, and I want to make sure that it's one, too, that doesn't adversely affect small providers. My concern is that this would affect those small providers in rural areas that, you know, that don't have large service areas whose business plans, you know, are right teetering on the edge. This bill, I think, makes it very, very difficult for them to make the investments necessary to extend service to folks in these rural areas. And, you know, I think there is light at the tunnel for a possible bipartisan agreement for net neutrality. I think it may be best for the Federal Communications Commission to address this from a regulatory standpoint and not keep pinging it back and forth between Title I and Title II. I mean, there's been back and forth about, you know, is this an issue that comes under the Federal Trade Commission or the Federal Communications Commission? And I think, you know, we ought to be talking about truly what's the best way to make sure that we put reasonable requirements on the industry to make sure they operate within the bounds there, but don't be so overly prescriptive that we actually push people out of making the investments to extend coverage into rural areas, and to make sure too that that we are again doing the things that would lead an internet service provider to potentially block or throttle or do paid prioritization. And again, I think markets are pretty powerful in how they would assure that people through transparency would see if that was going on, and then they could go to another provider if they felt like those things were happening.
Well, Congressman Rob Whitman, it's been so great to have you today. I have one more question for you. Our ACA Connects members really are on the front line of providing broadband service in very, very hard to reach rural areas, small towns. We're trying to partner and to demonstrate to Washington our commitment to helping to solve these issues of what we call the digital divide. So from your perspective, how can our ACA Connects members and as ISPs best help you to achieve meaningful broadband action in the 116th Congress?
Well, I would just say continue to do the great work that you're doing, looking for opportunities to expand your business, to serve more customers, and keep doing what they're already doing, and that is looking to make sure we increase connectivity in our rural areas. You know, our office has worked extensively with one of your member companies, Atlantic Broadband, in my district, and they've really shown a strong willingness to work with our citizens in rural parts of the Northern Neck to help bring up to 1 gig in internet speeds, to look at how we can innovatively connect with areas. One of the things I spoke of, and that is this Dominion project, where Dominion's putting power underground, but we've talked them into leaving poles up and looking at an opportunity for a joint use agreement with Atlantic Broadband for them to serve customers in that area. So it's little things like that, and this has to start. This is not going to be, you know, serving thousands of people in one swoop. It's going to be serving, you know, 75 people here, 85 people there, 125 there, and then as you leapfrog, you can build that fabric. And I really appreciate, you know, their efforts, and I look forward to continuing that relationship and looking for thoughtful and innovative ways to make sure that we get internet to all the corners of the district, and especially in our less populated areas.
Well, thank you, sir, for being a champion of broadband issues, and at ACA Connects, we certainly look forward to working with you in the days ahead.
That sounds great, Matt. Listen, thanks so much, and thanks again for all you do there at ACA, and we're looking forward to continuing working hard up here to get more connectivity in all the corners of the 1st Congressional District, and for that fact, all across Virginia.
Thank you, sir. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks again.
Thanks again, everyone, for joining us on today's ACA Connects podcast with our special guest, Congressman Rob Whitman of the U.S. House of Representatives and Virginia's 1st Congressional District. I hope you enjoyed listening to our discussion as much as I enjoyed the opportunity to talk with a congressman about important broadband matters affecting our country. We'll have plenty more from Washington and our industry as we talk to folks about these and other issues, and please send us your feedback. We love to hear from you with your comments and suggestions, so send them on in. As always, you can find our ACA Connects podcast on Apple Podcasts, Podomatic, and our website at www.acaconnects.org/thehub. And don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review. Thanks so much to our ACA Connects digital guru, Matt Mare, for his help to make this podcast happen. We'll be back soon with another podcast where ACA connects.